Now, in a 4-3 decision yesterday, the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled that Governor Evers went too far in restricting the capacity of bars and restaurants across the state. The court found the governor needed to get the approval of the legislature. This is the third decision from the justices limiting the governor's power to respond to the coronavirus pandemic. We want to hear from you. Are you concerned about our government's handling of the pandemic? Were the emergency orders too broad, or were they needed? Do you think Governor Evers could have done more to work with the legislature? Or do you think the governor should have more latitude? We're at 1-800-642-1234. We have with us Sean Johnson, Capitol Bureau Chief for WPR, who's been following the latest. Sean, welcome back.
Hey, Molly. Thanks for having me.
Good to talk to you. So give us the latest on these capacity restrictions. What did the court say?
So the capacity restrictions never really had a chance to go into effect. I mean, this is something that the governor's administration, specifically the Department of Health Services, ordered back in October as Wisconsin was starting to see cases really start to climb and hospital capacities start to be tested. The capacity restrictions themselves would have limited bars and restaurants and some other indoor businesses to 25% of their usual capacity. They got taken to court relatively quickly. It bounced around between a couple circuit court judges, but they were struck down. I think what this really was here this week was a chance for the Supreme Court to weigh in on this particular type of order and the Evers administration's use of this particular law when it comes to dealing with the pandemic.
Right. So talk to us about Justice Brian Hagedorn and his rulings. What did we hear from him this time?
Yeah, so Justice Brian Hagedorn has become pretty much the swing justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. I mean, he is a conservative. He has written opinions for the conservative majority on some high-profile cases, including the recent case that struck down Governor Tony Evers' statewide order that set up Wisconsin's mask mandate. But he has shown a willingness to buck the conservative majority. And I think noteworthy, last May, he sided with the Evers administration when the rest of the conservative Supreme Court struck down Wisconsin's much broader stay-at-home order or safer at home. So there was some thought that since that conservative majority had been trimmed from 5-2 to 4-3, this was a chance for Hagedorn to kind of have a do-over, you know?
Yeah.
But what he ended up doing is writing a very brief concurring opinion saying basically that the Evers administration, the DHS, had done again what the court had specifically said that they can't do in the safer at home ruling from last May. And Hagedorn said that while his issues with the court's ruling that first time around were well publicized, that because of his respect for the court and its authority, he had to uphold that earlier ruling. So, you know, in essence, while he didn't like the logic of that earlier ruling, it was the, you know, established ruling, kind of the law of the land when Evers' administration issued these latest restrictions. And Hagedorn said, you can't do that.
So basically, he said, I agreed with you the first time, but you kept doing it. And he didn't. He didn't side with the Evers administration this time, like you said. So what is this going to mean? What is this going to mean for the Evers administration and their ability to control the pandemic?
In theory, there is still a chance for Wisconsin to issue statewide emergency orders due to the pandemic, you know. In theory, this can happen. In theory, you could have another statewide mask mandate. In theory, you could have statewide capacity restrictions on bars and restaurants. But the common thread on all of these rulings is that the court has said that, you know, that the Evers administration needs to involve the legislature. So like safer at home or stay at home, the stay at home order. And, you know, this latest order involving capacity restrictions, they both involved a law that spells out the authority of the Department of Health Services Secretary. And what the court has said in both of those cases is that when the DHS secretary issues orders like this, they have to be promulgated as emergency rules. In other words, they have to go through the legislature, and the legislature has a chance to effectively veto them through the rulemaking process. When Evers issues his own orders, like he did with the mask mandate, the court said, okay, you get to do that for 60 days, but you don't get to reissue those orders. If you do, you need the legislature to buy in. And Governor Tony Evers and the Republican-controlled legislature do not see eye to eye on these types of orders. That's grown increasingly clear as the pandemic has gone on.
So what is this going to mean for the food aid deal that the Evers administration struck with the Biden administration? I mean, didn't we see another emergency declaration from DHS recently?
So that one is a little bit different. I mean, I guess I would say a lot different. So that one was kind of an emergency declaration in name only. I mean, essentially what the DHS secretary did in that case was Karen Timberlake directed her own department to do stuff that her department is already doing. You know, so the DHS secretary is already in charge of the Department of Health Services, and the Department of Health Services is already overseeing the state's vaccination efforts, is already overseeing contact tracing, is already overseeing testing efforts. And her declaration ordered the department to basically continue those roles. And through the deal that the Evers administration reached with the Biden administration said that would be enough to continue receiving. It's up to about $70 million a month in enhanced federal food aid. So without any kind of an order, that monthly funding was in jeopardy. But, you know, obviously the Biden administration is friendly with Evers administration, and they were able to agree on this, and Wisconsin will continue to receive that funding.
So that wasn't seen as an expansion of their authority in the way that the other emergency declarations were.
No, just looking at the order, it looked like basically kind of restating what the department already does. And I can just tell you that when I reached out to spokespeople for Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahieu and asked them if they had any issues with it, if it broke the law, they did not respond. So I think given the adversarial relationship between those two and the governor, if they had felt that they went too far there, we'd probably be in court, you know,
yep.
But they seem to have let that one pass.
Well, let's bring another voice into this conversation to talk about what kind of precedent might be set here. We have Jeanine Geske with us, former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice, also a retired professor of law at Marquette University. Justice Geske, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome, Molly. My pleasure.
So, Justice, how much of an impact do you think this ruling will have on future administrations?
Well, it does have an impact. I think that particularly when we're dealing with emergencies, you know, the emergency here is a health emergency, a pandemic, but a lot of this authority in terms of the governor's ability to react to it and to put emergency orders in applies to a whole host of emergencies. And what's interesting is in the past, the legislature hasn't objected. They obviously, my view is that there's the partisan nature of the dispute on some of the orders and things, you know, got the legislature to bring Evers to court. They could have also simply revoked the emergency order. They have authority under the statute to do it, and they didn't. You know, and I always think when these kinds of things happen, it's interesting because down the road, you could certainly have the reverse being true with a Republican in the governor's office and a Democratic legislature, and suddenly everybody shifts their views on it. But there are, you know, with these cases, at least for the time being, there's strong precedent that the governor's authority is very limited, not only to the 60 days and not on extension, but it is also the Department of Health Services is limited in terms of forbidding gatherings and things for in health issues unless it's been partly authorized by the legislature.
Yes. And Sean Johnson, before we let you go, what are you keeping your eye on in terms of legislation in the next few weeks?
I think in the next few weeks, there have been some bills that lawmakers have advanced related to COVID-19. Again, these are things that the governor doesn't necessarily support. There had been some talk that they might try to override a governor's veto of an earlier COVID-19 bill that included some stuff that he liked, but also included provisions that would have, banned vaccine mandates by public or private employers and given the legislature's budget committee more power over federal funding. You know, beyond that, I think you're going to start to see lawmakers shift into budget mode here pretty intensely. And there's going to be a lot of talk over federal funding coming to Wisconsin due to the pandemic.
Budget season, another sign of spring. Well, Sean Johnson, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That was Sean Johnson, WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. And we do have Janine Geske, former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice, with us. We will be right back. You're listening to Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Molly Stentz, in for Rob Ferret. We're talking with former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Janine Geske. She's with us today to talk about the precedents being set with the latest state Supreme Court rulings limiting the governor's power to respond to the pandemic without the state legislature. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-642-1234. Do you want to see more bipartisan solutions to the pandemic? 1-800-642-1234. And Justice Geske, the phone lines are lighting up over here. So many folks that want to speak on this. Let's go next to Dave in Winter.
Here we go.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What would you like to say?
Just a second. I'd just like to say that I'd like to add in that local municipalities don't adhere to the governor's decision on mandates, mask or whatever, social distance or anything like that. It's just, and the local sheriffs and
right.
police force don't even bother to stand by those rules.
Right.
It's just, yeah. It's
so if you don't have enforcement, kind of what good is the law?
No.
Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right. It's like a free for all is what it's like.
Thanks for that call, Dave. Justice Geske, what do you think about that?
Yeah, well, he's absolutely right. And the question is really, it almost became advisory because there, I don't know that there was enforcement, at least in terms of individuals complying with some of the orders. My understanding is there was enforcement on some of the establishments and the kinds of activities they had. And there were, it may have been under municipal ordinances, but taverns got fined and so on. But, it's really setting a standard for the state. And, I don't think any of us really wanted police running around arresting people who had their masks pulled off. But, to make a statewide statement that these health preventive actions are important for the health of our communities. And I think that's what the governor wanted to accomplish with it. But he's right. They weren't certainly being enforced by law enforcement.
Right. So what do you think this means for the next administration? I mean, I was just scrolling through emergency declarations that past governors have made, and There can be many over the course of a year, whether it's propane shortages, tornadoes, flooding.
Well, and what's interesting is one of the arguments on one of the statutes is the governor can issue an emergency order for 60 days. And the question is, if there's another occurrence or event that happens related to that first incident, can he issue an order again? Because that's the theory on which Governor Evers proceeded to say, you know, the pandemic changed, the numbers went up, there was more danger. And the court has said you can't do that, that the legislature has to be involved after that 60-day period. You know, the problem I have here is that the legislature could have decided to cut off his order at any time and not taken him to court. But they chose instead to litigate this and take it up to the Supreme Court to set precedents, you know, for future governors and particularly, you know, to say that this governor had not complied with the law. And I think that's a shame. It shows that, you know, the relationship between the parties is really at an all-time low and unfortunately, they're not able to work together for the benefit of the community.
But the law could be changed. I mean,
it could be changed. The legislature can change it. In theory, the court can, but it's less likely with several precedents there that that's going to happen anytime soon. And that's what Justice Hagedorn was saying, is that there was just this case decided last year, and he didn't feel comfortable saying, well, I didn't like it, so I'm going to change it. But certainly a legislature could change the statute and change the provisions and give more authority to the governor or put other provisions in. You know, there's argument on the governor's side that, in fact, the law was pretty clear that he had the authority to do it. But now with court cases in place, he's not going to be able to do it unless the legislature consents.
Yes. Let's go to the phones now. We have Eli joining us from La Crosse. Hello, Eli.
Hi. I just want to say that, well, I think that Evers did overextend his authority. I think if he would have tried to involve the legislature early on, there would have been a better chance for a middle ground to be found. But the way that his relationship is with the legislature, once any amount of time passed and once they saw a chance to take him to court, that's what they did. I think the legislature could have done a lot more for the state. I think Evers could have tried to work with the 11th legislature a lot more. You know, I just want to make another comment. The other caller said sheriffs weren't enforcing that. A lot of rural Wisconsin counties have less than 12 sheriff's deputies total and have to cover dozens of townships and hundreds of square miles. So there's, even if they wanted to enforce it, they don't have the manpower.
Right.
No.
I know. I've driven by a number of bars and restaurants with full parking lots over the past year. Well, Justice Geske, I'd love to squeeze in one more call. With Cheryl next from Lodi. Hi, Cheryl.
Yes.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have been calling my representatives for a week and a half because of the food stamp benefit, and the legislative board has just decided not to work with this governor, and they were willing to take the $50 million of food share away from the most vulnerable people in Wisconsin, the disabled, the elderly, the very poor, and the and children, to make them, you know, just so that they could say, hey, we're better than the governor. They need to stop making these Republican, Democrat, and mask or not mask, and they need to realize that it was about food, and just like this other, the new mandate is about having the ability to stop this pandemic and stop making it Republican, Democrat. The legislative, absolutely, they're not even returning calls to their constituents because they won't call anybody that disagrees with them.
Oh, sure.
Cheryl, I think you are expressing the feeling of the majority of people, that they would just like people, the legislature and the governor's office and the government at the national level, to take care of the best interests and the health of people and work together to do that. So,
yeah, thank you, Cheryl. Well, Justice Geske, what now? I mean, you mentioned relationships between the legislature and the governor being at rock bottom.
Now,
what now?
Well, I think that, you know, there's just going to have to be an effort on some of these issues. And I do think part of it is really calling on people to pay attention during their elections and who they're electing, and insisting with their legislators that and the governor's office that they work together. I think there has to be public pressure put on these branches of government, because this, you know, the stalemate that we have happening both nationally and statewide really interferes with the ability for government to do what it's supposed to do, and to balance those branches. So, I think we're going to continue to have disputes, but I do think the public has to make clear that that's not what they want.
Well, Jeanine Geske, before we let you go, I'm wondering your thoughts on the latest Chief Justice.
Yes, Pat Rogenczak just finished her term as Chief Justice, and Annette Ziegler has been elected Chief Justice. Annette's been on the court for some time and has a lot of experience. She's very conservative on her judicial views, but that in theory should not affect her work to oversee the courts. I'm very close to Ann Walsh Bradley, Justice Bradley, and I very much would have liked to see her as chief. She is the most senior member of the court, but that was not meant to be. And so, I'm hoping that Annette does a great job in trying to build the morale of the courts and to help to continue the courts as an important third branch in the government, and to let people know what the workings of the court is. So,
well, thank you, Justice Geske, for joining us.
You're welcome. It's great being with you.
Thank you. That was Jeanine Geske, former Justice of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, retired law professor at Marquette University.